When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Your Making It Worse. We're here, we're queer, who cares? I'm Elliot Glazer.
And I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott. Textual healing.
Well, 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 what a fun story.
Well.
Here's a fun story that I saw that I thought it'd be fun to discuss.
Not brought to you for a pure for men.
There's a man named Alex Hall who lives in Texas, Austin, Texas. He's 28. And he's a cook. He's an amateur chef who launched a show on TikTok and Instagram called The Bottoms Digest.
There's a serious problem that we need to talk about right now. Bottoms everywhere are starving themselves just to get their freak on.
Welcome to The Bottoms Digest, you starving slut. The cooking show where I give you peachy clean recipes for a peachy clean time.
Interesting.
He cooks food. He makes foods that are meant to be for gay male bottoms. And he said, I really wanted to create something that deep
people who enjoy bottoming, not just gay men.
Or people.
That's correct.
But he does his like catchline is something like, I don't remember it actually exactly, but it's like, this is for you, slut, or like something like that on his videos. He says, I really wanted to create something that destigmatizes talking about poop in the bedroom. Shit happens. Don't get in the pool if you don't want to get wet. No one deserves the shame that sometimes comes with that conversation, and everyone should get to reconnect with food that makes them feel good. And so overall, you know,
I support that.
Yeah, sure, I do too.
Yeah, for sure. But I guess something about this is still annoying.
You know what is it like? It's funny because like we've talked about this, and I'm not gonna get too into the details, but all of our regular listeners know some of us have previously struggled with IBS. And it's like it's a significant factor.
Elliot
at times, that's correct. It's time to be honest, Elliot. But it's a significant thing. Like, yeah, I mean, and there is so much embarrassment surrounding, you know, stuff like that. And like yeah. And but it's also I'm on my own podcast talking to my two dear friends, and I'm like, I can't even say poop. Like I'm so uncomfortable with it that
Why are you so uncomfortable with it? I mean, I get why, but like
because it's
embarrassing.
Well, I will say, like, evolutionarily speaking, it poop is gross. Like it's full of bacteria, so you're not supposed to touch it, and that's why you're repulsed by it. Like
it looks and smells.
It's not cultural, like they didn't roll in shit in the 1600s, and it just turns out we're grossed out by it. So I think there's some evolutionarily, some biology in it, you know?
Well, sure. But there's also like, you know, I mean, to me, I'm like, well, it's just a rational sort of like side effect of the area in which we're playing in. And so like, if that is a result of the area in which we're playing in, well then it's not so much like someone just came over and took a big shit on me. It's more like, oh, this was just an accident that happened, and I'm going to understand these accidents that happen and not be crazy and think he just took a shit on me.
Yeah, yeah. It's the matter of understanding, like you said, that this is like, you know, butt stuff is like what we do, and that when it happens, or if there's a quote unquote mistake or whatever, like it shouldn't be a big deal. And I think if two people are mature about it, it's not a big deal. But I also understand what Brent's saying, where it's like, I prefer it not happen.
It's also the top's responsibility to not freak out. I think that, I think most of this lies in the top's responsibility in how they're dealing with the person who's bottoming, because it's clearly not something that the bottom did intentionally. The top needs to be the one to not freak out about it and just accept it as just sort of what it is, and maybe even put the bottom at ease in the situation.
Right. Well, some of us are getting lightheaded, but I will also say, do you ever have a conversation? Do you ever ask your female friends if they like anal? I've actually found myself, and again, maybe this is a stereotype, maybe Alan, you're going to be appalled, but I always had a stereotype that women don't like to do that, and they do it very rarely. And I feel like recently I've just had some chats with some friends, and I'm like, I think I'm wrong. I feel like way more common than I had anticipated.
Women, I mean, my female friends that I'm pretty chill with, it's not like something that necessarily they're eager to do, but I do think that it is something that is, not more accepted, but like, it's just sort of like, it's what men like, and you want to like please the man sometimes, and which is a sexually gratifying thing for the woman to also be able to please her partner in the situation. And so if that's something that her partner wants, well then that's a part of the experience. And so like, yeah, women have anal. I also think the patriarchy prevents them being open and accepting of it. Yes, and so there's a stigma. Exactly. Yes, exactly.
It's a gift for your husband, or it's, you know, or it's, you know, makes you a gay freak or whatever.
Yeah.
The other way. But I guess,
or if the man likes it, the woman pegs the man. Like, yeah, there's a lot of stigma around that in the other way, in the opposite way of the patriarchy. So it's like there's a lot of stigma against butt play in general.
We haven't heard about the patriarchy in quite a while. Thank you, Alan.
You're welcome.
Go ahead, Elliot.
I was gonna say, meanwhile, I guess I'm not too surprised that the main foods regarding being, as he says, food that quote unquote empowers bottoms are dairy-free, mild, plant-based, with fruits and veggies and no processed foods.
Lots of fiber.
Just sounds like fiber and movement.
Well, fiber and movement. Yes. It's also like seemingly of like a really difficult diet to follow, like sustainably, like, you know, and the idea that you eat like that indefinitely, or that you do that a day or two before you hook up or something.
I think it's a general idea, but also I'm curious, did you put Metamucil in the Google Doc? Or
yes,
I did.
I did put Metamucil. You're forgetting what you put in your own doc. And
that's something that I think you should do more often. You know what I mean? Just have a regular vitamin supplement of fiber.
Yes, I've had a transformation of my life on Metamucil. I started taking it a few months ago, and I am
barely
having diarrhea.
I'm telling you.
I have less diarrhea than Elliot now. Just saying.
I've been taking fiber supplements since I was in college. They're very important. They're very important.
So is Metamucil different than what my sister wanted you to do? Psyllium husks? Is that different?
I think Metamucil is actually the active ingredient is psyllium husks.
Is it really?
Yeah. My sister's obsessed with you taking psyllium husks.
Well, that's wild.
I guess I finally took her advice 37 years late.
You just aged yourself.
How dare you? Take it out, you bitch.
Nope, not doing it. Not doing it.
Not even joking.
We are very lucky today to have, I would say, my favorite Real Housewife from the entire franchise.
Definitely mine. Definitely mine.
Leah McSweeney. Hi, Leah.
Being real?
Yes, fully real, God. Which is saying a lot because, like, the Erica Janes of the world does exist.
No, there's amazing women on the show.
No.
Yeah.
But here's why. Because, well, you know, first and foremost, you clearly inject a level of, like, funny, self-aware gravitas into the show. You know, it was very refreshing when you got on the show, for sure. But then on top of it, I don't know. A lot of people, in my opinion, like, act for reality TV. And for what it's worth, you just seem to be your real self and, like, confident in the way that you are. And it's just so refreshing.
You know what? Thank you so much. I needed some positive reinforcement.
Good.
Yeah.
It's not been easy. And just to, like, I was thinking yesterday, because, you know, I'm just getting ready to read bitches at the reunion. So I don't want to give away too much, but, like, there were some people saying some things in the press that I'm putting things on for the cameras. Okay. if I was acting for the cameras, do you know what I would have said? I would have said, yes, I'm early voting. I'm a good citizen. But instead, I spoke my real truth, which is not the popular opinion. And I knew I was fucking dragged because I am not acting for the cameras, nor am I fucking ever going to do that shit. I don't care. I'd rather you fucking hate me for my truth than love me for some bullshit, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's also like I've been in my head so much about this, like, oh, like, you know, are we doing things for the camera? Are we not? Like, where does the line get blurred? Like, because obviously we're aware that the cameras are there, but I really do my best to just
be authentic.
I can't speak for Brent or Alan, but I'm very fascinated by the, you know, having watched Housewives of New York from the beginning, or most reality shows, and I think the guys can also attest to this, like, I find it so, you know, we've had reality TV for like 20 years now at this point, if not more, and the idea that it went from being somewhat raw and real and very much unedited to now, like, it is a performance, and like, especially on Housewives, like, you guys dress up so much for confessionals and that kind of thing that it's changed. And I appreciate like both sides of things, but the line has to be super blurry when everybody is so media savvy and self-aware that like,
or they think they're media savvy.
Yeah. Right. It just seems like such a existentially like exhausting experience to be on reality TV or something as popular as Housewives.
I'm exhausted. Yeah.
Yeah. How could not be?
Leah.
But also, like, you know, like, okay, so I brought glam with me, like, some of the trips. And also, like, yeah, it was a fucking pandemic. Do you know, like, they didn't have any fucking work, like, because, like, so they were very happy to be, like, working for things. Also, but I'm also, like, I also go totally makeup free, like, looking like absolute, like, shit and don't give a fuck. So it's not like trying to like have for people to not ever see me without makeup on or anything like that, but hey, like, why not? Everyone else,
of course,
on the other franchises, they're bringing glam. Why the fuck aren't I?
Yeah, it's just funny when you look back and you see, like, when you think of like the first seasons of that of Housewives or any show, but like the first season, truly everyone's wearing, like, it looks like everyone, even if they're in their like early 40s, is wearing like Talbots, you know, like statement jewelry and like scoop necks, and it's like, whoa, it's like mom, it's crazy, it's like full on like mom style, and now everyone looks like they're in drag.
Yeah,
totally.
Well, Leah, I did want to ask you, because you brought up something that to me was so sort of like surprising this season. I don't want to get too into the weeds of the show, because I know a lot of people listening to our podcast probably don't watch Housewives, but they know of the Housewives.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
That's interesting. I don't know who, like, well, yeah. Ask me your question, but then I'm curious who listens to your podcast.
Well, because there's like, I mean, well, there's two different types of sort of like homosexuals. You know what I mean? There's like the homosexuals like me who are in, literally before we got on, I was watching Scary Island. Like, I mean, that is like, and you're not even in that, and I was watching that. That's my fun Sunday activity. So like, I'm that homosexual. Whereas some homosexuals listening to this podcast, not all homosexuals, a lot of women listen to the podcast, a lot of different types of people, but they are probably more like, who are these people? And why are they yelling at each other? Like, it's literally like polar opposites.
I don't know any of those homosexuals.
So you and I initially talked, we started talking on Instagram.
Yeah.
Because you were like, I forget exactly what I had posted.
You posted about all the gays going to Mexico during COVID. And then and then we started talking about that. Well, you were posting the funniest shit too. But
thanks. You were saying, I was like, oh, I feel, you know, my friends and I often feel like aliens when we see this stuff. And you were like, you said you know, growing up in Chelsea, you obviously grew up around tons of gay people, but but once you went on Housewives, you said this was, it felt different. And I'm curious. Yeah. I'm curious.
Yeah. What about that felt different?
I don't know. I don't remember saying that.
Yeah. You said like, you know, that you'd never encountered this type of, I guess, gay energy, like a new type of gay energy from the moment you went on Housewives. And I didn't know if that meant like a fandom.
Yes. I mean, I guess I knew that like gay men like loved the show.
Sure.
I had never experienced, obviously, being a part of it. And so I never had so many gay men paying attention to me.
Right.
For better or worse, you know? But yes, growing But growing up in Chelsea, I mean, yeah, I was like in the gay epicenter, like of the world, you know, it was great.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
I do think there's one thing this season that like I was, and you brought it up earlier, the whole like you weren't sure about early voting and like you were really talking about what a lot of Americans I think were kind of experiencing during the election. And yeah, and you like one of the things that I love about you this season is you kind of do what I think a lot of us did with maybe our parents or with a lot of other maybe older people who were kind of beating around the bush about supporting Trump. I'm specifically speaking about Ramona. And like talking up, holding people to task for some of their political views and how they maybe don't align with certain things happening societally. Like,
right.
Was that important to you this season? And like, were you kind of afraid? Because it is a polarizing topic.
I mean, before this season aired, when I was doing press, people were like, what's one word you can use to describe the season? I'd be like, polarizing. Because I knew that we were talking about topics that are polarizing. I mean, that, you know, that it's kind of sad because like, you can like, for instance, like if you meet someone and, you know, you just start talking about everything except politics, let's say, and you get along with them and everything. And like, wow, you have all this stuff in common and, you know, you're from the same town or like you listen like the same music and, you know, you went to the same school. Then you find out they're on the other side of whatever you are politically. And you're like, ew.
Yeah.
Like, actually, now I fucking hate you. Not that I do this, but like, I'm saying that, you know, not that, I mean, I can be, I'm capable of being like that. You know, I try not to be, but, and I am, you know, pretty much a libertarian at this point or an independent voter or whatever you want to call it. But it's hard for me to, I feel politically homeless, I guess, you know? But there are some things that I think we can find in common, no matter, and there are some things that everybody should agree on, which is like, racism is disgusting. You know what I mean? Things like that. Like that should just be like that.
Little
things. Yeah, right. It should not matter what side you're on, you know? Yeah. But anyway, yes, I thought that, you know, yes, it was a tense season. It's very reflective of the world we were living in at the time. And it is what it is.
Yeah.
What's been like your political evolution? Like you say you kind of consider yourself sort of a libertarian now, but you're raised in Chelsea, which I always kind of assume Manhattan is full of, you know,
wear rainbows all the time. Yeah.
Right. Right.
My parents are pretty like independent kind of like they are like middle class, like Irish, Italian, like working class, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So,
but of course, I mean, my brother's godmother is like a gay Jew who like,
right.
I mean, and he was baptized like with her, you know, so yeah. Obviously like very liberal in that sense. I think that I was so, like when I was like 18, that's when like World Trade Center happened, right? 9/11, Hurricane Katrina, weapons of mass destruction. We started so many fucking wars. Bush, I was like the most anti-Bush, anti-Republican fucking person, you know? I mean, I still think Bush was like, I don't even want to get too into it. I don't want the headline to be like, Leah attacked Bush, like I get it. Like everyone like likes him now and I'm like, what the fuck, you know, because like if you're my age you remember that shit and he was like the worst person. I was idealistic though, you know, like because I was young and I was like, we're all gonna live in peace and blah, blah, blah. And now I'm just a little more like, damn, everyone's fucked and I can't trust any of these people in government, you know, like that's kind of how I feel. Like I just feel like politicians are there to stay in power, you know, they're there to make money. And they would flip in the second if it just meant being in power or, you know, making money. And that's kind of
You have such an interesting, because I was thinking when you were sort of talking about your evolution and like you talking to people and assuming that you're okay on politics and stuff. And like for, I think the three of us could probably agree, like talking with gay guys for the most part or queer people in general, you're gonna assume your politics align. Like I don't ever in a conversation, there are some times where I have to remember, oh, I'm talking to a straight person. They might like Trump. Like I don't, because I'm sort of wired to think like, oh, well, of course I live in Los Angeles. You're a homosexual. You're gonna agree with me on politics. Whereas you encounter a bunch of women on a show who A, they're not all, none of them are gay, and they're all have different wildly political views. Like, that's such a straight problem, and I love that.
I don't think it's such a straight problem, but honestly, I don't think any of the women are that, like, political, to be honest. Yeah. Like, no one's, like, thinking too much about it. You know what I mean? Like, I really don't think this is, like, something that they're, like, reading about. Like, and I read the news a lot. Like, I don't watch news channels, but, like I read Politico, The Hill, you know what I mean? Like, I read that shit, like, all the time. I mean, and I'm not that high, I'm not educated in politics. I really don't understand too much of it, but I do read it a lot, you know? I don't think the women are paying too much attention, and God bless, because honestly, I don't fucking blame them, and I should probably take a break myself.
What privilege.
But with that being said, Sonia, like, kind of, there's some moments where she's like,
I mean, Sonia,
sorry.
Sonja.
She's like fully woke. Like, she is, there are moments where she says things where you're like, oh my God, she is fully listening to the societal, cultural conversation. She's fully digested it. She fully understands it. And it's like, oh my God, like, I only wish everybody could be like that.
Yeah. She's great. Really.
She's up here in Teffler bag commercials. Like, she's living that life.
Killing it. She's really killing it this season. She's great. And you know, I think that this season is just very like indicative of like this time we're living. The world. Mm-hmm. It's the world. It's like, you're talking about race too much. Like, well, you're fucking, are you aligned with white supremacy? Oh, you're looking at everything through a racial lens. Like, you know, like, but my people, this and that. Like, it's that's what it is. And I mean, honestly, it's sad because, like, obviously we've lost viewers and, like, that's a big thing in the press right now. And it's like, well, you know, but the people who are watching will see us go and get through. Thank you. We'll see us get through these. And it was tough. Like, it was really tough. Like, I was like, oh, shit. Like,
it's uncomfortable, but it's necessary.
It's so fucking uncomfortable. I was like, oh, my God. Like, when I had my conversation with Ebony, I watched it back. I'm like, oh my God, I'm not even finishing my sentences because I'm so afraid I'm gonna like I'm like, you know, you could kind of, and she's like, I get it. I'm like, because I don't want you to like, you know, like, I'm really kind of terrified. And then I called her like after I watched it. I'm like, God, I hope, I'm sorry. I'm like, you know, I hope you didn't take that as me saying not to speak your truth or anything. She's like, no, it's all good. You know, I was trying my best. I think we all, I mean, I want to say we all tried our best. I'm not sure we did. I think Ramona could have listened more, obviously, but we get to a point and it's going to, like, now we're like in the second half of the show, kind of in this season, where like we come to an understanding, and the people who are watching and have stuck with us and like weren't so, just had such a visceral reaction to race being talked about, God forbid, because they'd rather watch women possibly steal from, you know, old people, because that's so much more enjoyable to watch. I don't know. You know, those people, I just, oh my God.
Was that a subtle reference to another franchise?
No, I mean, if you know, if people who are watching will see us get to a great place. Despite the differences, right? Despite the political differences, despite not understanding and seeing things. Because sometimes it also comes down to, like, obviously sometimes people are wrong and sometimes people are right, but a lot of the times it comes down to people having just two different perspectives, and it's not someone's right or someone's wrong. It's like two completely different people who have walked through life completely differently and had their own issues, but they're separate and they're not the same. Because like I said in the confessional, Ramona, you look at Ramona and think she hasn't suffered. Look at her. She's like in the Southampton. She's in this. Meanwhile, you know, she's had a brother who died. She grew up with, you know, domestic abuse. I mean, you know, all this stuff. She never had to deal with racism though, right? So, you know, there's all this like nuance. Like, maybe Bravo's not the best place to have nuanced conversations. I don't know. Like, we're trying. And, some people don't like it and some people appreciate it.
And Ramona, I think, represents in a lot of ways, although I do think, you know, she's in her own other world, just sort of floating around. But like, she does represent what I think a lot of white Americans represent right now. And what we're trying, I think, a part of the Black Lives Matter movement, part of a lot of these conversations are about recognizing that culture, that generation really does need to see themselves and how they come off, and to be able to listen more, like you said, to be able to have these uncomfortable conversations. And she might not get it, but us watching do.
And by the way, you're in New York. And like, I mean, I'm from there. We've all lived there. You know, it's like, I don't watch all the other franchises, but obviously they all have different themes and styles. And, you know, when you're in New York, like, yeah, people talk about identity politics. Like that is the main.
Well, not where Ramona lives.
But that's part of it. I mean, right. Everybody talks about identity politics, except perhaps those in Ramona's world. And I think in New York, that tends to be especially in Manhattan, I think that's the minority. And I think that's why it's so interesting to watch. But yeah, it's probably a moment of reckoning where you're like, well, you know, if the viewers are down, it's like, do they just want to see us be, you know, flamboyant and drunk, or yeah. Do they actually want to see how we talk when the world is changing, you know? And I'm not saying one or the other is right or different. It's just
I want both. I want both. I want the conversations and the alcohol.
I think that we can do it all. You know, I think we can. I think that it's hard to see Ebony being dragged like right now. And it's just like just if you don't like it, turn it off. You don't have to go on everyone's page and just say the nastiest things. I just read an article in the New York Times yesterday that Roxane Gay wrote called Why Are People So Awful?
Yes. I read that too.
Okay. And it's great, you know.
Join her book club. Great book club.
Oh yeah, it's great.
I'm a part of her book club. Yeah.
Okay. I absolutely will. But I mean I thought it was just a great article. And I think people have been stuck inside for so long. Yeah. And people are so miserable and so angry. And you know, we're still living in such a fucked up. People are like, Leah's like so like not like she's being so uptight this season. And I'm like, guys, yeah, I'm sorry that I wasn't having fun. You right. Living in New York City in 2020 when you couldn't even walk into a restaurant. My daughter is not in school. Mm-hmm. I'm switching from antidepressant to antidepressant so I can get the fuck out of bed. You know what I mean? Like. It was a crazy time. It was really a crazy time. I think it's like, we're going to look back. My trainer Martin is like, we're going to look back at this season. It's like a time capsule. I'm happy that we talked about all this shit. I'm so happy. Like, sorry that we didn't have someone who was like being sued by like plane crash victims this season. You know what I mean? We had, what would they be talking about if it wasn't for that? And Rinna's daughter effing Scott Disick. Like, you know, we had Ebony, you know, like we had to face a lot of this stuff and talk about it.
Yeah, I should say I my guilty pleasure is Housewives of New Jersey, and I grew up in Long Island, and so it's very similar. I get the same vibes, and what's so funny is that I think they must have filmed around the same time as you last summer, and it is almost as if COVID doesn't exist. And it's completely different. It almost has no impact on the show whatsoever, despite masks and stuff. That's New Jersey. Like it's so, and they're not, and maybe identity politics isn't the thing that everyone's going to talk about in Jersey, but it's, you're not going to not talk about it when you live in New York. You're not.
Yeah.
Well, for instance, like last season, like they asked me an interview. Oh my God, I'm going to get in so much trouble for saying this. They asked me an interview about the tiki torches.
Oh.
Like, they were like, why did
Wait.
You do that?
Before you go into that story, we should probably for our listeners say you famously, when you first joined the show, you had a night at Ramona's Hamptons house where you got a little tipsy and threw tiki torches, which was an amazing moment in television history. Please continue.
Butt naked. In interview, they were like, why don't you like tiki torches? And I was like, Charlottesville?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that didn't make it in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
Right.
That was never explained. And a lot of people had no idea. And I was fucking really blackout drunk. I wasn't blackout, like I kind of remembered. But I was like, I saw those tiki torches and I was like, I think it was the mix of like the tiki torches and then that Southampton party I had to go to and I felt so uncomfortable. I just fucking lost it.
Yeah. And I love that like even at your drunken state, you were actually standing up for a cause, which I kind of love.
Yeah.
You are a true activist.
Drunken mood state.
I guess so. Oh my God.
Wait, I do want to ask you, because you and I share something very similar. And well, Elliot has been a longtime member, but you and I are new members to this club. I too converted to Judaism. Yeah.
What?
Yes. So You had your moment where you're converting now, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I converted. I after it wasn't because of chemo, but after chemo, I went through the whole conversion process. And there's even a movie. I'll send you a link to the movie. You can watch it, mm-hmm. Latter-day Jew. And I went from Mormon to Jewish. Boom. Look at you. Oh, we're the same.
Oh my God.
Yep. Yep.
Puzzle. This is
amazing. Know. Where are you in the journey?
Okay. So I'm actually meeting with my rabbi in person tomorrow, which I'm very excited about because I switched from my Orthodox rabbi, who I'm still in touch with and I adore. He's like the funniest, best guy in the world.
Who was he? Who were these rabbis? Because they're very famous in New York.
Yeah. No, I don't want to say. I can't say.
Okay.
I can, you know what? I'll let you know. Like,
yeah, DM me. DM me.
DM you and tell you who. But so I went from the Orthodox rabbi. Now I'm at a conservative synagogue doing it on Zoom. But I haven't met this rabbi in person yet. So I'm going to go meet with him tomorrow. And of course, I'm already having the very healthy amount of Jew guilt, being like, I don't think I'm ready to convert by September. I don't have all the prayers memorized. And I was just at church with my daughter getting confirmed. And I was getting emotional that I'm not a part of this anymore. And, you know, so I have like a maybe month or two more left of classes before my mikvah, but I'm telling you, I don't feel ready yet.
Oh my God, the mikvah, you'll be ready. You'll be ready. The mikvah is, Elliot, have you ever done a mikvah?
Yeah.
Yeah, a mikvah. I had never obviously done a mikvah until after I converted, and I went out here in Los Angeles, and I went to the mikvah, and it was probably, and I say this in the movie, but it was probably one of the there are no words for how emotional that moment was. You will so be ready for the moment, trust me. It just continue on it. It's like the most important thing ever do.
I want to know
after your daughter. After your daughter.
Wait, how did you? Why did you start with? Why did you start with an Orthodox rabbi?
Okay, so my two friends, who they're kind of, one is a controversial Jew. I'm not gonna say who.
Honestly. Yeah,
DM that too.
DM you. So two of my Jewish friends. Was at a dinner party with them right before COVID. It was the February before COVID. I'm like, guys, I'm doing it. I'm finally doing it. I'm making this official. Introduce me to rabbi. So they both gave me two rabbis. And of course, one was like, you have to go to mine. You have to do it the Orthodox way. And the other one's like, oh, you got to go to mine. This is the right. Exactly. So I just went with that one because I thought that's what I should do, And then I was like, all right, well, I think some of this, I'm not really going to be able to fully do. And I don't want to convert inauthentically and convert to a sect of Judaism that I'm not going to be able to honestly really try to do, But I think, my Orthodox rabbi is still kind of like, he was making it very difficult for me, obviously, to convert, which is how they're supposed to do it.
Sure.
Like, I'm going to the conservative synagogue because they have the classes and this, and he goes, listen, go to that. And then when you're done, we'll talk again. So he's still like, kind of, he's around, and he's still a big part of my conversion. And I feel like, I can run things by him.
They'll always be around. My rabbi always says that you always have two synagogues. You have the one that you belong to and the one that you go to when you're pissed off at the other one. And it's like, so you'll have a bunch ready for you. Don't worry. You'll have a lot of options.
How old is your daughter now? And what does she think of the conversion?
So Kiki is 14. She just got confirmed.
What does that mean? What does confirmed
mean? I don't know what that means.
So when you're Catholic, you confirmed, and you pick a name of a saint. And
what was her name? What was the name? Is it Madonna?
She picked Veronica, which is after her grandmother who passed on her dad's side, her dad's mom. But my mother has been teaching her CCD class since she was like in kindergarten. So my mother, I have allowed my mother to raise my daughter Catholic, even while I've gone to the Hare Krishna temple for years. I was going there. I've let my mother I allowed her to do this. Mm-hmm. So Kiki, and whatever. It
just
is
let her have her.
I can't really talk too much on that. But I think that, Kiki is, Kiki just like, she knows me and nothing surprises her with me. And she's like, okay, you're going to be Jewish. Like, whatever, do you, mom? Like, she's not,
Do you have a name, a Hebrew name in mind?
I mean, I don't. I mean, I would think Leia, but like.
Yeah, Leia.
Leia, like, which people already have called me many times for many years. Like, Jewish people that I first meet, they're like, Leia. I'm like, sure. That's fine. I think I would just choose that, even though, of course, I love the story of Esther.
Yeah. But I think you go with Esther. See, I did that. I was like, I don't, because my name is so not near Jewish at all. I mean, not at all. Alan or Scott, like none of it works. And so I went with Solomon or Shlomo because it has a bit of flair to it.
Love that. Love the Shlomo. That's
you went with Shlomo?
Yeah, it sounds like a dick. And I'm definitely defined by dick.
I love that.
Yeah,
love
right?
That. We should also put on the record that Brent hates Jews. So just
No, I feel bad. I know. Are you Jewish? You're not Jewish. Maybe you.
I'm not Jewish, but you know what? I love the people. I love the people, and I support them all. No, I'm not Jewish. I was actually raised non-religious. I was raised an atheist, so I appreciate all belief systems equally, quite frankly.
But yeah, so many Jews are atheists, though. I mean, so many.
Yes. Yes. And that's one of the things that I love about Judaism is that you can literally, like, I was raised Mormon, and it was, there's no way in the world you would be excommunicated if you said you were atheist. Like, you couldn't be anything. Whereas in Judaism, there's space for you to have, like, dissent.
Right.
And it's all about questioning. That's why I also love Judaism. It's just all about questioning, and that's all I do.
So. Yeah, it's so funny because you said that your rabbi was like trying to talk you out of it. And it's like, it's so unique that a religion would be like, no, we don't, you know, not so fast.
<You know>? Right.
Well, Leah, this has been so much fun. So much fun talking to you.
Oh my God.
So great.
It's really liberating to just like be honest.
Yeah.
And congratulations. I don't know how long it's been that you've actually by this point been sober, but congratulations on that too. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's amazing.
Quite a year, huh?
Yeah, it's all, yeah, seriously, like I'm, you know, a sober Jew almost.
You're not alone, trust me.
I haven't started dating women yet, but like,
right.
Who knows? Yeah. But I'm booze free because I'm like Cali sober, so I don't you know what I mean?
Yeah, Demi Lovato sober.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. That's what she is.
What does that mean? I don't even know what that means.
Demi Lovato, right. Demi Lovato is Cali sober also. And she doesn't like frozen yogurt either.
Well,
we talked about that on the podcast before.
Yeah.
Well, I would say that usually we end every interview with where can people follow you on the internet, but everyone knows where to follow you on the internet.
So. Oh, wait. Oh,
yeah.
You should promote, we obviously Married to the Mob is your big brand that you started. But
Someone said on Watch What Happens Live, they're like, I'm not good at selling myself. I'm just really not. And like on Watch What Happens Live, Andy's like, how's Married to the Mob? And I was like, good. Like, why didn't you say like, it's fucking great. And I started another brand and Married to the Mob. And I'm just like, oh God, I don't know. I'm just not like, I don't want to push it on.
But tell us about Happy Place. I mean, that's rad.
Yeah.
Happy Place is great. It's so different than Mob. Obviously, it's a sustainable sleepwear brand. And I just needed something new to like get my creative juices flowing. I love Mob, but it's like, you know, I've been doing it for fucking, you know, 18 years or something like that. And I just needed to add something new. So happyplacebrand.com, you can check out our sustainable robes and t-shirts. And we're developing more stuff as well. mttmnyc.com, you can buy shirts with vulgar sayings on them.
Yes.
And you can follow me on Instagram at Leah Mob. I'm not on Twitter because it's toxic AF.
Terrifying.
And,
yep.
Yes.
And it's a cesspool, so I'm not on there.
Good.
Amazing.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
We're
so happy to have you.
Leah.
Thank you for having me, guys.
And another thing.
So one night, I had the idea to make, I was sitting in bed and I had the idea to make a 10-point spectrum of homophobia. It just for some reason, it like
it was Saturday night. You had nothing to do.
Saturday night, I had nothing to do. I guess the reason in particular it came up is because I feel like I've noticed that, you know, there are shades of acceptance and hate. And I think recently, obviously, amongst social media and in particular the left, like if you aren't constantly marching at pride parades, you're a monster. Like you're a bigot. And I think we all know that there's a certain reality, which is that there's like nuance to homophobia and also to acceptance. Yeah. So this is really funny. Cause like the way I make notes of things is I will Google it and then I'll screen grab the Google. So if I'm like laying in bed, and I don't have anything like no pens or paper near me.
Yeah.
So I Googled it. And it turns out that a list, an 8-point uh-huh. list of homophobia already exists. It's called the Riddle Scale.
Yeah.
It was developed in the early 1970s by a psychologist named Dorothy Riddle.
Just to give a little background on Dorothy Riddle, because it's really important. She's really big in the gay rights movement. She was instrumental in making it so that the American Psychological Association took away homosexuality as a mental illness.
Oh, wow.
Like, that was her. So wow. 1975, Dorothy Riddle is actually an icon.
Mm-hmm. I was getting to that. But yeah, anyway.
It wasn't in the doc, bitch. I had to put it in.
No, it wasn't in the doc. But it was, anyway, so I just thought it'd be kind of fun to walk through her 8-point scale from the 70s and like maybe even give examples of like people that fall within each category. So do you guys want to start? You want to do that?
Yeah, for sure.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's start with I'm going to go 1 through 8. Number one, this is sort of the most homophobic. It's called repulsion.
Grindr profile.
That's right. Homosexuality is seen as a crime against nature. Gays and lesbians are considered sick, immoral, sinful. Anything is justified to change their behavior.
You should put that on your Tinder bio.
By the way, it already is. So I thought this was like, you know, this is probably an easy one. This is like a standard, like Fred Phelps.
Yeah.
You know, pray the gay away type minister. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. Did you guys have any? Wait, who's Dennis March?
March. I grew up next to these like imbecile, like on Long Island, our neighbors were like true, like,
yeah.
They were so out of place. They were almost like backwoods country bumpkins. With like heavy accents, but my parents will still remember to this day, like they had a small party at some point after moving into the house, and they came, the couple came over that lived next door, Dennis and Marie, and they somehow got into the topic of Liberace, and mentioned how he was obviously gay, and the husband of the couple, Dennis, said, "He can't be gay, he plays the piano."
Yeah.
Like, it was repulsed by and then you know, he went on to be like, I think maybe a little more dumbfounded, but clearly repulsed at least by the possibility that Liberace could be gay, and to make that even crazier because he plays the piano.
Yeah. That's how my Aunt Bev was with Rosie O'Donnell.
Oh right.
Yeah. In a way she's a lesbian.
Yeah, that is whatever. It reminds me this is sort of a common theme I've heard amongst like political discussions online about homosexuality, is that a lot of people will claim it's disgust. Literally the sex act itself is disgusting.
Yeah.
And my rebuttal is always, I agree.
Meanwhile, they're jerking off to their daughter's Barbie dolls. Yeah.
Sure, of course. If they protest too much,
Anyway, the next one.
Next one up is pity. So this represents heterosexual chauvinism. Heterosexuality is considered more mature and certainly to be preferred. It is believed that any possibility of becoming straight should be reinforced, and those who seem to be born that way should be pitied as less fortunate.
And I think gay people sometimes adopt this, or sometimes straight people too, whenever that whole thing of like, well, why would I want to be born gay? I'd want my kid's life to be easier or whatever. It's like a pitying thing. Like, we must pity the life of the homosexual because they have it so much more rough. So of course I'd want them to be straight, but I love them nonetheless.
Yeah, that's a fair point. You know, I thought of this as sort of like a Antonin Scalia, who was a very conservative Supreme Court justice, very famously virulently anti-gay in his decisions. I had a coworker, this was funny, I had a coworker in, you know, 2006 at a .com in Detroit I was chatting with some friends, you know, coworkers in a business, you know, in a meeting before it started. And someone, one of my female coworkers mentioned just going to a gay bar. And my other coworker was appalled. It was just like shocked. She goes, "You went in? Really?" And she was our age. It was so surreal.
Did she know you were gay?
I wasn't. I don't think I was out at work, but I remember good old Michelle.
I love that you were working at a .com in Detroit. Like, that's such like a random, it feels very random to me.
It is a little random. That's right. Okay. So the next level is number 3, tolerance. Homosexuality is viewed as a phase of adolescent development that many people go through and most people grow out of. Thus, lesbians and gays are less mature than straights and should be treated with protectiveness and indulgence one uses with children who are still maturing. It is believed that lesbians and gays should not be given positions of authority because they are still working through adolescent behavior.
I think that's been aged. That's a 70s thing. That isn't really a thing.
Too. Yeah.
I mean, maybe it is, but...
I mean, although I feel like growing up, at least in the early 2000s, the idea was not full acceptance or almost gay being unremarkable, but I hated being told that I was tolerated by people. I hated that.
Oh yeah.
I was like, I don't want to be tolerated. Fuck
you.
I actually watched a documentary about an AIDS patient recently, and they were talking about his parents' acceptance of him, and it was exactly that. It was kind of like a
lot of that in the 80s.
That was why I thought like this kind of represents standard like 80s and maybe early 90s kind of parent behavior. Okay. So now we're out of the quote homophobic scale, and we're halfway through. So the next one, number 5 out of 8, is support. People at this level may be uncomfortable themselves, but they are aware of the homophobic climate and the irrational unfairness, and they work to safeguard the rights of lesbians and gays.
Yeah, to me, this is like fully the straight guy in the movie being like, I don't understand it or anything, but like, you know, hey, to each their own, I guess. Like that's what that is to me.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
Elliot.
Sorry. No, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just gonna say, I think of this as sort of like, you know, sort of like big city Republicans, or you know, this was kind of like, to me, this is like a Mitt Romney, dare I suggest, Chief Justice John Roberts.
Oh, in your wet dream.
But like, you know, they're probably there, like, Roberts. Do you remember when there was that documentary about Mitt Romney, and in it he was listening to David Sedaris, and it was like a big deal. People were like, Mitt Romney's
very educated. He's very sophisticated. He's definitely a homosexual that you would, or not homosexual, he's a straight man that you would like run into in like a sort of a homosexual way and be like, well, you just like to read. You're not really gay. You just like to read.
Sure. Yeah. What were you going to say, Elliot?
I was just going to say, like, if you might remember the Bagel Boss guy when he from Long Island a couple years ago, the Bagel Boss guy who like got into a fist fight and he was like 4'11". Remember him? Anyway, it was just great because at some point he got a little press, this tiny little dude from Long Island. And eventually, I think it was on Stern or somewhere where he was trying to do one of these like celebrity boxing matches. Yeah. And I think just to play with him, Stern was like, are you gay? Like, or like, how do you feel about like gay stuff or something? And he was like, I have no problem with it as long as they don't hit on me. And
sure.
Well, luckily nobody's going to hit on you.
No one's going to hit on you. Gotcha.
I don't know though. Yeah. I love little guys. I really
I actually do too. I just hate that.
I just hate that attitude again. It's like, no, it's not about you. This is not
it's
about you.
So juvenilistic. And it's like, but then like, by definition, you do have a problem with it if you say, you know.
Of course.
With that said, spin them like a dreidel, you know.
With that said, would I hit on Chief Justice John Roberts? No, I wouldn't, because I respect him. I respect him and I respect his marriage. All right, number 6.
Oh, shit.
Admiration. It is acknowledged that being lesbian or gay in our society takes strength. People at this level are willing to truly examine their homophobic attitudes, values, and behaviors.
That's very modern to me. That's a very, that's very like what we're in sort of now.
Average millennial.
Where it's just sort of like to the point of, you know, it's the, oh, we'll go shopping. Like they find out someone's gay. Oh, we'll go shopping. Or you can help me with this. You can come to the girls' night thing. Or it's sort of that.
I think like the average millennial, I think it represents someone who, you know, understandably doesn't spend all day thinking about our plight, quote unquote, but like give it a lot of consideration. And I think are solidly allies.
I had that at the dentist the other day where I went in with my bag. I had my bag and they were all fawning over my bag. And it was like talking about how it was a Prada bag and all these things. And I was like, do you do this with women who are in the office? Like, I don't think you do.
Yeah,
like, I think I'm the exception here.
Yeah, they were being like extra kind. Yeah, that's interesting. That's a good point. Okay, number 7, 2 left, appreciation. This is the diversity of people is considered valuable and lesbian gays are seen as a valid part of that diversity. People on this level are willing to combat homophobia in themselves and others. I thought this is where I fall, I think.
Yeah, I think I've fallen here.
Yeah. Because the next
the
level,
last one. Yeah,
the next level is like to a degree that I'm like, Jesus, chill out. Number 8, nurturance assumes that gay lesbian people are indispensable in our society. People on this level view gays and lesbians with genuine affection and delight and are willing to be their allies and advocates.
That is fully me. I will admit that fully. I do think that the early foundations of this country are based in sort of Native American and Indigenous people who believed in two-spirit identities, and I agree, and they were cherished in their communities. And I think that is where queer people lie today. So yes, that is me.
Yeah, I don't know. I hear indispensable. I'm like, well, not really. I mean, like, society would continue. Like, I don't think.
Oh, it would continue, but it would be a lot more boring. There'd be a lot more Ted Dansons on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
You know, that is true, especially when you look at, like, the you know, the AIDS epidemic, when, like, losing all those gay men in particular, obviously losing a ton of people, but also especially with you losing gay men, you lose so much artwork and artistry and creative people and you know, that obviously has an impact on society. Yeah. But I also am like, I guess indispensable, but
you could do without them.
Humanity would continue.
No, I'm a number seven. Well, I was also going to say, last thing is that I feel like we are in an era where there should possibly be a ninth category, past nurturance. So it's like overboard. And this is like people who view the gay community with so much affection that it becomes like patronizing. You know, you know, I guess Alan, you kind of said this a couple levels ago, but like talk about going shopping or just like, I only hang out with my gays, you know, I only have my gay friends. Yeah.
To me, this is where like bachelorette parties at gay bars fall.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, sure.
Where it's like, you know, this is now like, this is their space, but I'm such an ally that me and my girls are going to come here because we won't get hit on.
Yeah. They think it's a safe space when really they're invading a space. And it's like, no, you're an invited guest in this space.
See, I disagree. I think people should be allowed to go to whatever bars they want, as long as they're not jerks.
Yeah. I don't think they shouldn't. It's just, I was going to say it's kind of tacky, but I don't even think it's tacky. I just think it's like, well, as long as you know what you're doing, long as you have some understanding. But I think in that sense too, it's like, this is where the sort of patronizing comes in, where it's like, I'm here too, you know? Like,
yeah.
The
bachelorette party's like, I'm here too. And it's like, okay, well, you know, that's not what this was for, but nevertheless, we're happy to have you here. Happy to, you know.
Right. I get you. Support. I get that.
But is there a Susan Sontag level? I think there is, actually. I think she encompasses a whole level onto her own, her mindset.
Yeah.
Like, there's like a label-less sort of arrogance.
I don't even think in those terms.
I don't use those categories.
I don't use those categories.
Well, we salute you, Dorothy Riddle. Thank you for beating me to the punch on creating a chart of homophobia like 50 years before I thought of it.
What would your aunt say?
Brent, what would your aunt Ramona, not Ramona Singer, say about today's episode?
I was uncomfortable with the amount of time you spent talking about another Ramona.
If only she knew. Yeah. My aunt Anne would very likely say, tell Leah to talk to me. We're not going to go with Leia. Okay, it's too. I can come up with something much better in this. I'm not going to finish that one. You get the bit.
Yeah, we get it.
All right. How about Aunt Anne?
Aunt Anne would say, the only thing I'm converting to is Wendy's. Their chicken sandwich is delicious.
So good.
Oh my God, I can't get it off my mind. Sorry, Leah.
I love Aunt Anne.
Their chicken sandwich is delicious. Oh my God. Just their plain chicken sandwich. You know what I mean?
I got Chick-fil-A again recently. I did, and it was really good.
I need to try it. I mean, I don't really, but I do.
Myself. It's fine. But remember, they stopped. They stopped doing the whole gay thing.
But then
they found out that they were still doing some stuff. Giving money to charities.
Clearly, you're a number seven, Brent.
I love Dan Caffey, though. The name Dan Caffey for a homophobe is perfect. Anyway, thanks for listening. I'm Elliot Glazer.
I am Elliot Glazer.
And I am Elliot's bussy.
You're Elliot's Glazer.
Oh, please.
Oh, this now she mad. Now she mad.
For a moment, I was like, did I say bussy right?
You said bussy.
Is it bussy?
Ugh. I don't know. Bussy. Is it bussy?
I would assume it's bussy because it's bussy normally.
I'm keeping all of this in.
No.